Hello, and welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. More than usual. For me, at least. So we're going to talk about Raw for a bit. Because, you know, nothing happened. Well, I mean, less than the usual nothing. Because so many people tested positive for a deadly disease that they had to rewrite the show at the last minute. So, guess they couldn't use everybody because a bunch of people had the disease. So they had to rewrite the show and do things they wouldn't normally do. And those things, as a result, were obviously pointless, at least at this point. And then a bunch of other stuff was, I won't say pointless because they had a point, but it's the wrong point to be having in other things. And then there's, gee, I wonder how this mixed tag match is going to be in the main event. Wow, won't there be a lot of drama when somebody tags out and then the other person has to go and tag out as a result, ending any possibility for a hot tag, which is the whole reason tag team wrestling is exciting. Anyway, we'll go through all of Raw, and then I've got a little bit of an existential crisis I want to talk through with you guys, because you guys help me out with that kind of stuff sometimes. So, I appreciated this. Well, A, I appreciated that they had Samoa Joe presiding over the dual contract signing instead of Jerry Lawler, because Jerry Lawler probably shouldn't be on TV anymore. But he used to do these contract signing presidings. Is that when you preside over something, is the noun form of that a presiding, a presidation? I don't know. Anyway, it's nice that Samoa Joe's there doing that. Also, it's nice that they decided to dispense with all the bullcrap that we're all waiting for everyone to start fighting at a contract signing, because that's what always happens, because the only reason to have one of these in public in the ring is so people will start fighting, which is supposed to build anticipation for the match on pay-per-view, but doesn't really, because nobody ever heard of keeping champion and challenger apart until the big match anymore. Nobody does that anymore. So I appreciate they dispensed with all that crap and got right to Sasha Banks and Bayley beating the crap out of Asuka with Samoa Joe trying to keep order. I finally get them separated. And then Dolph Ziggler shows up, and Dolph Ziggler insists on introducing Drew McIntyre. And then Drew McIntyre comes down, and Dolph Ziggler, as is normal for him, he is the only man in the world who believes he can win this match versus Drew McIntyre. I know there are a bunch of Dolph Ziggler fans out there, but even they don't actually believe he's going to win the match. They just, you know, they appreciate his work in ring, and I understand. I was misguided too once. But as much as he is very good in the ring, The last great feud I remember him having where I was like, wow, this is a lot of fun to watch, was versus The Miz in 2016? If it wasn't 2016, it was 2017. So it's been like 3+ years since he's had a really good feud where you're like, wow, I really like enjoy watching these matches. But back then, you actually thought he might win a match. But he lost to the age-old maneuver of heel's wife sprays hairspray in the face of the babyface. Ah, darn it! That age-old maneuver. Cut him to the quick. Dolph Ziggler is a confidence man. Do you know what that means? A confidence man. Now, it means he's got a lot of confidence in himself, but it also means that he takes you into his confidence. You give him your confidence. You say, I'm confident in this man. I believe that he will give me what he says he's going to give me. And what Dolph Ziggler says he's going to give you is a great match. And also a match in which it is plausible that Dolph Ziggler might well come out on top. That is what he's selling you. But what is short for confidence man is con man. A con man, we all know what that is. That's somebody who plays tricks on people. You think you're going to get one thing, oh no, and then you get something else. And then a person like, you know, steals your money and runs away because he's a con man. And that's what Dolph Ziggler is too. He takes you into his confidence. You give him your confidence. You say, I believe in you, Dolph Ziggler. This will be the time where you will, against all odds, come out on top. And every time, he doesn't. And then the next time he comes back and says, this is going to be the time. This is it. This is where I'm going to come out on top because I always steal the show. I'm Dolph Ziggler. And maybe, just maybe, you allow him to take you into his confidence again. And then disappoints you again. And eventually, I hope, for everyone else's sake, eventually, you stop doing that. You stop giving him your confidence. You stop believing his lies. Now, Dolph might not actually think they're lies when he says it, but he's got to be understanding this too by this point. It's all a hoax. The whole thing. Dolph Ziggler is a hoax. Dolph Ziggler, who shows up out of the blue, having been, traded for AJ Styles. AJ Styles for Dolph Ziggler and a Bobby Roode to be named later. Because Bobby Roode is safe in Canada, laughing at all of us as our COVID numbers spike through the fucking roof. Dolph Ziggler shows up out of nowhere and says, I want a title shot, and they fucking gave it to him. He's a confidence man. He's confident in himself to steal your fucking money. That's right. So anyway, he says he's going to win because he always says he's going to win. And then he signs the contract, and then Drew signs the contract, and then he says, you know, Drew says some stuff to McIntyre about he says some true stuff. He says you want to be a center of attention, and you could never actually be because you always drop the ball when you're close to in the big matches. You come up short, which is true. Now again, I know he's booked to lose all these matches, but that's the problem. You can't book him to lose all these big matches over and over and over again, and then keep booking him into big matches that he's going to lose over and over and over again. eventually it just becomes like a one of those things where like the snake catches his tail and eats himself. Is that a thing? Anyway, Ziggler, Drew is so confident, again, a confidence man. He's so confident in himself that he says, Ziggler, I'll let you pick the stipulation. Oh, that calls into question all of our confidence in Drew McIntyre. We are so confident that Drew McIntyre is going to win. I mean, look at him. He's been beating everybody with ease. How could he be taken in by Dolph Ziggler? Not possible. Unless Drew is so confident in himself, he's overconfident. He's an overconfidence man. And he gives Dolph an opportunity to pick the right stipulation, which is going to be what? A ladder match? It's Extreme Rules, the horror show. Or as we decided to talk about on the SmackDown show, the logo puts a W in where the X is, and because it's the WWE logo, so it looks like a W. So it looks like it's ew, Dream Rules. So that's what we're going to call it from now on the Sour Graps. It's ew, Dream Rules, the horror show. Because they decided to tack that shit on in the end for no reason. And they're making all their fucking people in the ring when they're talking about it. When I face you at Extreme Rules, the horror show, I'm going to beat you. That, nobody would fucking say that, would they? They might be able to say, when I face you 2 weeks from Sunday or whatever. Like, maybe they'd say that, but this... ridiculous. So Ziggler decides to respond to being given the opportunity to make pick the stipulation, and then Asuka yells at him in Japanese until she signs the contract, and then Sasha Banks pipes up and she says, Asuka, I am not the same person you faced before. I'm the legit boss. And I thought to myself, pretty sure you were calling yourself the legit boss back then, too. You know? Like, I'm not the same person I was back then. I'm the legit boss now. I was also the legit boss then, but I'm even more of a legit boss now than I was then. I'm the boss of your legitest boss. I'm also the blueprint, the standard, and the role model. When you say, I'm not the same person I was, and what your evidence of that is that you have three more nicknames now, that doesn't help your case. I can't wait to see Sasha Banks versus Asuka. It's going to be a great match. But the build to it sucks. Anyway... I like that Sasha Banks has her own custom stamp that she stamps the contract with. I think that's cute. Very in keeping with her character. Has she done that before? I think she has done it before. Didn't she do it with like Becky Lynch? I like the stamp thing. I think that's a gimmick they keep returning to. Anyway, Bayley runs her mouth, and then Asuka and Bayley and Sasha get involved and start having a kerfuffle. And then Ziggler tries to super kick Drew, and Drew catches him and throws him out of the ring, and later it's made, well, we're going to have a mixed tag match. Challengers versus the champions. Heels versus the babyface in a mixed tag match that doesn't really fucking matter at all. Let's put that on as the main event and wonder why it turns out that this episode had the third lowest rating of all time for Raw. I wonder why. So, they start out Start out backstage with Garza and Andrade and Zelina Vega and Lady Ref Jess, Jessica Carr, who's great. I really like her a lot. I don't love that they're using her. Either she's telling Ivar that he's cute and Eric not so much, or she's being hit on as a bribe by Angel Garza. I do like that she's not taken in by him because that makes her look smart, but I don't love that it's like, oh, she's a lady ref, you know? Lady. So either she's got the hots for the big fat guy with the big beard, because that's funny, or she's getting hit on by all the guys, because that's the... Can she just fucking do her job and be a person? Like, just a person who's a referee. As opposed to,
oh, she's a girl ref, so that means there's different rules for her in the way we write her.
Fucking just grow up. Again, I liked that she rebuffed Angel Garza's obvious bribe of a rose and a future date with him to call the match in their favor versus the Viking Raiders. I like that she turned it down. But what that does is only serve to make Charlie Caruso look like more of an idiot, because she's doesn't see through Angel Garza's, Lothario-ness. Because as we've discussed every time we talk about Raw, and as we'll discuss every single time we talk about Raw, Angel Garza is fucking engaged. We saw it on television on the very same network that you decided to put this shit on. Give me a reason. Give me a reason why you decided to show us. You showed us him getting engaged. Give me a reason! Every time, I'm going to have to bring it up because they're anyway, she's like, oh, hey, what were you talking to that lady ref about? I'm so jealous. I'm so insecure. Me, Charlie Caruso, who's gorgeous and has like arms that look like she just does bicep curls all day. Like, Charlie Caruso, I'm so jealous that you were talking to this lady ref. I'm very insecure. Me, Charlie Caruso. Come on, guys. Anyway. So Zelina Vega mocks Charlie Caruso. Do you guys think you're next in line for a title shot if you beat the Viking Raiders? Like, yes, of course they do. Big Show shows up and immediately talks down. Well, he would have to. He's 7 feet tall. Ha ha. Talks down to Zelina Vega, calls her Smurfette, and disrespects them horribly. Angel Garza and Andrade, and says, hey, I know you got a match next, but that doesn't matter because I need to go talk to Randy Orton right now. About what? As we find out, Randy's not even here. We do know a lot of people on Raw tested positive for COVID. I'm not saying anything, but it's weird that Randy's not there for this angle that they're pushing so hard. I'm just saying. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying. It's weird that Randy's not there. As we're going to do all night, we're going to recklessly speculate who's got a case of the Rona on account of the horrible negligence purported on them by their employer. Employer? Can you have an employer if you're an independent contractor? I'm not sure. So Big Show says, I'm taking over your slot. I'm going to go talk to Randy Orton. So what a dick move by Big Show. We're supposed to root for this guy. Okay. Big Show calls out Randy Orton. He like, I don't like you, Randy Orton. Why would you? Why the racket, Randy Orton? I don't like you very much. We had a conversation in the ring last week. I want to have another one that's also going to go nowhere. and Zelina Vega and Andrade and Angel Garza come out, and they show kind of apologizes, but like, I'm not in the mood to play tonight. Blah blah blah. Get Smurfette, get your boys under control. Later in the night, he completely he thinks that it's Angel and Garza. He's like, oh, excuse me, Andrade, whatever. Oh, are they disrespecting you, Big Show, by not kowtowing to your will? Or are you disrespecting them? Or are the bookers disrespecting them? Let's find out later. Because they decide to mock Big Show for being a so-called legend, but he deserves it because he interrupted their interview and took over their time when they were supposed to have a match. Anyway, so they decide they're going to get on the apron and decide they might decide to attack him. And then Ric Flair comes out, and Ric Flair, who is 71 and may have actually died on the operating table not so long ago. So if there's anybody you want to call in to the plague-infested PC, it's Ric Flair. National Treasure Ric Flair, or at least WWE National Treasure. Anyway, he's like, I want to talk about Orton. He's here. He's just not coming out. And he says that you say that, I don't know. Let's just ramble on and on about how we're going to continue this feud without Randy being here. But we're not saying why. Randy will come out here when he's good and ready. Oh, Willie. Willie. I don't know. Willie? Maybe? No? Maybe? Anyway, Flair takes a liking to Andrade and Garza, and then the Viking Raiders come out, and then they brawl, and then they have their match. And it's a fine match. It's whatever. I mean, it's not explicitly for a tag title number one contendership, but it ostensibly it is. It's fine. I mean, it's like one of the longer matches on the show. It's certainly longer than Andrade. Excuse me. It's longer than Eric and Ivar went against the Street Profits last week. Is Andrade or Garza? One of them attacks the legal man outside the ring where the ref can't see it, which, In the pantheon of heel tactics, is really low on the list of dastardly things you can do. So, anyway, that leads to Garza hitting the wing clipper on Eric to score the pin. That's it. This is a fine match. I think these guys could have much better matches if it was for anything involved. The Street Profits also conspicuously absent from this show. Not saying anything. Just saying. The Street Profits, the tag team title holders, who have been inseparable from the Viking Raiders for months now, not on the show. Just saying. We continue to recklessly speculate. Not saying anything, but I'm just saying. We recapped Ruby trying to maybe possibly offer condolences to Liv for getting worked over by Natalya in a match that they edited out all of Liv's offense. From when they showed it on TV, apparently they taped a longer match where Liv got in some offense against Natalya, but in the match they showed us on TV, she got none, but they put pictures of her offense up on WWE.com, and Liv was like, hey guys, maybe you should have put that in the match. It was nice of you to put it on to use pictures of it, though, in the WWE.com. That was nice of you. So Liv's kind of pissed, and I would be too. Also, Liv, conspicuously absent from the show. Now, maybe she's being punished for going on social media and pointing out that they edited shit out of her match. Or maybe she's got the COVID. I don't know. I'm not saying anything. but I'm just saying. So the Iconics approach Ruby right backstage, and they, I like that they still you still don't have any friends, because they had a feud back in NXT where they basically Ruby Riott versus the Iconics. Like, they couldn't, Ruby Riott couldn't find a friend to have matches with them, so she beat them in handicap matches and one-on-ones and stuff like that. If I remember correctly, that was when Ruby was a babyface, a dynamite babyface at that. Very, very good at it. And really cool, because it wasn't the normal babyface. Like, she's all tattooed and she's different, super punk rock, all the piercings and everything. You wouldn't expect her to be a babyface in WWE, which is why it worked so well. And it was a nice little feud she had with the heels, Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, back in NXT. And I like that they kind of referenced that now. It was weird that she couldn't find a friend in NXT, but when she debuted on the main roster, she brought with her two people from NXT who she had never interacted with before in NXT. So she was like, hey, I got the call up. Who wants to be my friend on the main roster? And Liv and Sarah Logan were like, hey, me. It's a weird little plot inconsistency. I mean, I understand why they would want to. The bump in pay would probably be nice, but why weren't they friends with her in NXT? It's weird. Anyway, they blah, blah, blah. They snipe back and forth. And then Riott challenges one of you get in the match, and then the other one will carry the one I beat up out. So that's a match we'll have later. This is one of those things. I'm pretty sure this was not in the works until like half the roster came down with a case of the COVID. And we're like, shit, what are we going to do now? One of the Iconics versus Ruby Riott, I guess. This feels like one of those. So Rick comes up to Zelina Vega and her boys and says, I like you guys. I got an idea. Let's go talk about it. His idea is that they actually have a handicap match, Garza versus and Andrade versus Big Show. They'll announce that later. R-Truth versus Akira Tozawa. We're going to get a 24/7 title match because God hates me. I guess what is this? What is the 24/7 title now, except for a prop that R-Truth can carry around when he does his bad comedy? I would say like 45% of it is good comedy, and the rest of it is bad comedy. When he hits pretty well, but he misses more often than he hits. Today was all misses. They do some stupid comedy stuff where R-Truth does a little dance, and then Tozawa does his the thing that makes Vince laugh.
I love when you do the thing with your I love that thing. Do more of that.
That's what that is. And then Tozawa gets rolled up by Truth for a very easy win. Like, Truth fakes an injury because we love guys who play by the rules and aren't devious assholes. Boy, Truth, you sure were a con man in that moment. A confidence man. So he fakes an injury and then rolls up Tozawa and then runs away. A ninja tries to roll him up. Truth kicks out at two. It dodges another ninja, and he runs away, and all the other ninjas are chasing him. Lashley and MVP talk about teaching Apollo Crews a lesson. Seth Rollins says he's holding a Rey Mysterio mask. Again, there was a specific mask that Rey Mysterio was wearing when he got his eye put out. If Seth Rollins was carrying that mask around with him still to this day, like as a trophy, like maybe like stained with blood. Pretty badass. In this case, this is, I think, the third different Rey Mysterio mask he's been carrying around with him, which means either A, he went to WWE.com and ordered a bunch of replica Rey Mysterio masks, got that shit in bulk delivered to him. He's carrying those things around and brings out a new one every week. Or he got into Rey's gear and stole a bunch of his masks. Either way, it's not nearly as potent as if it was one mask, the same mask that Rey was wearing on that day that he got his eye put out. Anyway, this is his most important statement. He has to do it now. Let's go. He's going to talk in the ring. He's going to ramble about how evil he is. He is begging for forgiveness from it takes him a long time to get to the point. He's begging for forgiveness from Rey Mysterio. And but not for what he's done, but for what he's going to do the next time he sees Rey Mysterio in the ring. I need to apologize for the thing I'm going to do to you. I guess. He's very evil. He's so super evil. And then Rey and Dominic up here on the big screen. Hey, Seth, up here. They have to do it, because otherwise the people who are at ringside won't know to look at the Titantron. How could they possibly? Unless they followed sound with their ears. Anyway, I think they're just talking more shit to Seth Rollins, and he's like, you're gonna be a sacrifice. We're not gonna be a sacrifice. We're gonna beat you up. You're not gonna beat me up. You're gonna be a sacrifice. It's basically that for like 5 minutes. Dominic, if you keep getting involved, I'm going to end your career before it begins. So yeah, Aleister Black and Humberto Carrillo decide to get involved again. I don't know why the fuck Aleister Black is involved in this shit. I guess didn't he have a feud with Seth Rollins like a while ago? Did he? I don't remember. Did he? Somebody was telling me that, and I was like, I can't remember them actually having matches. I mean, kind of. Whatever. Yeah, so Aleister Black says, I know a little something about evil, and I know when I'm looking at it, and you're evil. And Seth Rollins is like, Mah! So they have a match. It's Rollins and Murphy versus Black and Carrillo. And Austin Theory is nowhere to be found. This is the kind of thing where you would think that Seth would send his two goons in for the tag match and not be a goon himself. But Austin Theory, very conspicuous by his absence. No, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying. It's weird that Austin Theory isn't there for this angle. And there's no mention of where he might be. Again, I'm not saying anything. As we continue to recklessly speculate who might have been forced into a position where they contracted a potentially deadly and debilitating disease on the watch of their employer. If you can even call it their employer, since they are independent contractors. Anyway, the match is fine. There's no problems with the match. It's a match. Does it mean anything? No, it fucking doesn't. At the end of the thing, after the match is over, Rollins and Murphy win, I believe, right? Yes? Yeah. Does it matter? No. Rollins hits a stomp on Carrillo for the pin. Alistair attacks Rollins, and Murphy makes the save, and they beat each other up around the ring, and they put the Mysterio mask on Carrillo. It's like, now you can just be like, you can be just like your idol. You can be just like your hero. I'm going to put out your eye too. And then Aleister Black chases off Rollins and Murphy. Murphy is able to distract Aleister Black long enough for Rollins to hit the stomp on Carrillo on the steps. And then the bad guys skedaddle. Oh no, Humberto Carrillo, his burgeoning career with all of those victories he's had. Remember all those victories he had in his feud with AJ Styles over the United States Championship? Oh, all the victories, all for naught now because he got stomped on the stairs. Asuka and Drew McIntyre are back together in the back, and they're being interviewed by Blonde, not Charlie Caruso. So Drew calls Asuka the Empress of Claymore Country because that's a thing. And he also says Sasha is not ready for Asuka, and Asuka says Ziggler is not ready for Drew. Oh, they're best friends now. We're going to continue to talk about good more Undertaker stuff. Thank you, Taker. Thank you, Taker. Getting out while the getting's good, Mark. Because who knows, they might have to fly you in here to prop up the ratings by being there. And you can contract the COVID. You're elderly now, so it's more dangerous. Yeah, they just continue to do the Taker thing. They showed the same video package they used, I guess, on SmackDown. I don't know. I fast-forwarded through it both times on SmackDown and on Raw because I've seen all of the Undertaker's best moments. Oh, so Lana approaches Ruby Riott, being like, hey, why were the Iconics being so rude to you? I know how hard it is not to have friends. I was so depressed when my Bobby decided to break up with me that I couldn't even do a TikTok. Ha ha! Oh, Lana. I don't even care what you're doing. Go, just, you know, Ruby Riott says, go sell that shit somewhere else. I'm not buying. Go ruin somebody else's career. Whoa, fighting words. And then Lana's like, you know, it's fine. Natalia has more wins than anybody in the history of wrestling. More than Lita, more than Charlotte, more than Sasha, more than Becky, more than everybody, more than all the people combined, is what Lana says about Natalia. Guys, I'm trying to pep this up. This is boring shit. Ruby walks away. Natalia, not on this episode. Natalia had a match with Liv last week, and neither of them are on the show this week. They're continuing the whole Lana and Natalia storyline, but and they're making reference to the Ruby and Liv storyline, but Liv's not here. Natalia's not here. That's odd. I wonder what... Say, you don't suppose they might have contracted the Rona from a dangerous and unhealthy work environment? I don't know. It's possible. I'm not saying. I'm just saying. Ruby Riott and Peyton Royce have a match, and Peyton Royce wins. Peyton Royce looks really strong. which is she just continues to bury Ruby Riott because she's a better worker than Ruby Riott, than Peyton Royce. But I did love some of the stuff Peyton did in this match. Peyton's always been very good. But she's got a new finisher, I guess. She used to have this awesome fisherman's suplex that she bridged out into, like, into the pin. That was really cool. Nothing wrong with it. But now she's got this badass spinning brain buster. Like, sweet. Yeah, I'm down for creating somebody new who can win matches because the Iconics only lose matches. And there was no... Was there... I mean, there's a bit of a distraction, but like, really? I'm not going to count that as like, this is as clean a win as you can have in WWE. There's always somebody trying to distract somebody. So, Charlie talks to Big Show backstage. This is where Big Show forgets the names of his opponents because Big Show is all about respect. As far as Angel and Garza, I mean, Andrade, whatever. As far as they're concerned, they picked the wrong night because I'm not a friendly Big Show. I'm an angry giant, which is the exact same fucking shit he said last week. So, Garza and Andrade versus Big Show, and Big Show wins. What are we even doing at this point, guys? Big Show was effectively retired. You brought him back for some stupid angle with the fucking ninjas, and he walked right into this whole Orton thing, probably because Edge got his triceps torn. They do the thing with Christian, and now it's going to be Orton versus Big Show. And if you want to have Orton beat Big Show, that's fine. I don't care. That's a thing. You want to have Orton retire Big Show for realsies? That's cool. I can dig it. That's a fine way for Show to go out for good this time. Fingers crossed. If you want to do it that way, fine. But along the way, could we not sacrifice two of our brightest young stars to fucking might as well be 75-year-old Big Show? Can we not? You wonder why your ratings are down, Vincent? It's because you don't know how to build new stars anymore. You build new stars by having the new stars beat the old stars. Not only that, and I know it's not real, but as Vince often says, perception is more important than reality. I believe I've read him having said that. Here's what we perceive from the night. Angel, Garza, and Andrade beat the Viking Raiders earlier in the night. And then Big Show beat Garza and Andrade together by himself. Now, you could say Garza and Andrade were tired from their earlier match, but fuck that shit. It looks like Big Show is better than any two man you have in the division put together. He beat them. They beat the other guys. Therefore, Big Show is better than any of them. That's how the transitive property works. People think this way all the time. I'm not saying it's correct. I'm saying people think this way. And you have to plan for that kind of shit. It's fucking ridiculous. Can you not book Big Show to win 2-on-1 handicap matches against two of your most promising rising stars, especially one who reports have said that Vince says is a future Eddie Guerrero in Angel Garza? You're not giving him an auspicious beginning. At least Andrade. Garza and Andrade have a they have beef in the match, and they get angry at each other, and Garza walks off. This is fun. It's really interesting. Like the glee with which Byron Saxton talks about Angel Garza and Andrade's friendship dissolving. Like he's so happy about it. It's weird. Byron Saxton, get a hobby. After the match, I mean, Big Show already won with a chokeslam. After the match, he picks up Andrade and hits him the knockout punch. What? So, why would you demean Andrade like this? So fucking stupid. You have the opportunity. You have so many great young stars. We're going to talk about a couple in a second. And you decide to punt them aside for a Randy Orton versus Big Show feud. Backstage, Ricochet and Cedric Alexander. Remember them? Remember them from television months ago? Yeah, they were pretty awesome. Whatever happened to them? Oh, Vince happened to them. Right, I forgot. They're backstage talking with Apollo Crews. And then R-Truth walks up. He's a little nervous because he's afraid of ninjas. He thinks that Cedric is a ninja, but then he calls him Cedric the Entertainer. Hilarious. He thinks that Ricochet is a ninja, but then he calls it Richard O'Shea, which is like, it qualifies as a good joke from R-Truth. More comedy, if you can call it that, and then R-Truth runs away. So Apollo Crews has a match with MVP. It's a match. MVP was retired until the Royal Rumble. Retired. Just done. Now he's a manager, and he's fighting your United States champion to a standstill. He actually wins the fucking match because Bobby Lashley gets involved. A stupid distraction. Apollo Crews should not be losing matches this way. What the fuck? What the fuck? Anyway, after MVP wins the match indescribably, like how, what? After he wins the match, Lashley puts Apollo Crews in the full Nelson, and then officials try to pull him off. Ricochet and Cedric Alexander run down, and they can't break it. So they actually attack Bobby Lashley. Ricochet hits a springboard drop kick after Cedric hits a kick to the back of the head. Back from the break, and Ricochet versus Bobby Lashley. This is long, longer than I thought it was going to be. Because they had Ricochet in the title match versus Brock Lesnar back at Sands of Time. And I think he got in a grand total of zero offensive maneuvers. So I thought it was going to be more of the same, but at least, you know, and Bobby Lashley was dominant. But Ricochet got in some licks, which is all you can expect at this point. If you want to see Ricochet at his full power against a much bigger opponent. Google, YouTube search, Prince Puma versus Mil Muertes from Lucha Underground. Those guys had some fucking great matches. That was, man, if you told me in 2015, 2016, 2017, Prince Puma is going to get signed by WWE. And he's going to be an undercard champion in NXT. And he's going to get brought to the main roster. And they're going to give him a couple of title shots and then forget about him entirely. I'd be like, just stay in Japan and stuff. Rick. Trevor. Just don't sign. You're gonna give them the best years of your life for nothing, which is what happened. They don't know how to build new stars. The fact that you can't fucking figure out how to fucking make Ricochet, who's a real life goddamn superhero, into a fucking star for your company that draws money. You are so fucking incompetent from the very fucking beginning. From the beginning of putting people in your fucking stands during the COVID times, every single person in that audience should have been mandated to wear a mask, one of your branded WWE masks, and then have Phillips or Cole or whoever promote that shit all night to sell to these people who watch your show. If perhaps there were people in power in government who would be smart enough to institute a mask mandate, then you would be swimming in loot because people would know where to buy masks that have the logos of their favorite wrestlers on them. But you finally let people wear fucking masks now. Finally. And no mention that these things are found in the WWE shop. So as bad a businessman as you are, Vince, you're also that bad of a booker. Bobby Lashley wins this match, and also he's full Nelson on Ricochet, and then he puts it on Cedric Alexander. I guess this is meant to prove that Bobby Lashley is a monster who's only lost his title match versus Drew McIntyre because his wife, who he is now divorced from effectively, distracted him. So he's a huge monster, but he doesn't get another shot at that title. No, that title shot goes to Dolph Ziggler. Now Bobby Lashley is trying to get his manager a U.S. title shot? What? What the fuck? So Dolph backstage tells Sasha and Bayley he's going to take the lead on this thing, and they justifiably make fun of him. This is a mixed tag match, which means there's no momentum, and any momentum is stunted immediately by people tagging in and out. Everything happening between Sasha and Asuka is good. They're going to have a great match. Dolph and Drew are not going to have a good match. It will not be a good match because you will never be in doubt. You might not be in doubt with Sasha versus Asuka, but the match will be good anyway because they're great workers who work really well together. Dolph tries to get himself over by bumping really hard. And then he'll hit a super kick out of nowhere and then fall into a pinning predicament. You know, like just draped across the belly of Drew McIntyre. And Drew will kick out in 2.5 and Dolph will be like, what? Anyway, this match ends with a pretty cool reversal of Banks applies the bank statement. Asuka gets out and puts Banks to an armbar, and then Banks gets a really good roll up, really clever roll up to get the pinfall. And that's it. That's the end of that. It's the end of Raw. Gonna more build to ew, Dream rules the horror show. More build next week. Won't that be great? Okay, so here's the thing that I wanted to talk about for a little bit, guys. They say you should never meet your heroes. And hero is a strong word, but I have to say, even people that you admire and look up to, and people whose work you aspire to, just people, you don't need to meet them to then have them horribly disappoint you and everybody else. The whole reason that I am sitting here talking to all of you, the whole reason I'm at Fightful at all, well, that's Sean Ross Sapp, because he hired me for here. But the whole reason I even started writing for another website to begin with was Brandon Stroud. I really admired his work. I aspired to say, hey, you know, this guy can do it. I feel like I have the same sensibilities and the same outlook about wrestling. We both want it to be great, and it's not, so we get pissy about it. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to try it too. And so I did. And using his style as a baseline and then moving from that, I tried my hand at writing reviews of Main Event and Superstars for a different website. And when Sean Ross Sapp was saying, hey, I'm looking for people, I applied using those things as my sample. He said, great, you're hired. And I grew with Fightful, loved every minute of it, wouldn't change anything for the world. And then I got my own show on the Fightful Network. I get to talk to you, the Fightful Faithful, twice a week, just you and I. And I really cherish these times. But the whole reason I'm here is because I was taken in by a confidence man. Because Brandon Stroud, while he was, I think, an exceptionally talented writer, he had an outlook that he is able to get across, and I thought it was very funny, all of that. Turns out he was also he was allegedly at this point, but my God, man, with all of the stories coming out, not all of them, I don't think any of them, but not all of them are fake. I think they're all real. So he's a serial sexual predator with sometimes teenage girls. And it feels really shitty to know that this person that I looked up to, frankly, in this line of work, could have been that person. And all kinds of people who knew him, friends of his, did not know this was the case. They knew he was a bad friend to them and a bad boss, because apparently he was just a really big fucking asshole to everybody he met, and also a sexual predator, apparently, allegedly. And the thing about it the most that really pisses me off is that one of the reasons I did admire him so much is because he had the same outlook on social issues that I do. He was a proponent for the women getting a better shot in WWE, for better treatment for minorities in WWE, better pushes for them, for getting some of the assholes out of wrestling. He had no time for Hulk Hogan and all that shit. was no fan of our president and the connections that he has to this company. But now I have to wonder, was all of that a lie too? It might not have been. You can certainly be anti-Trump and a rapist. You can certainly be like, hey, you know what? I think women in wrestling deserve a better showcase, but also allegedly be grooming 15-year-old girls to give you sexual favors. That's possible. You can do both things. You can be on the right sides of several social issues and be a colossal, horrible, disgusting human being in your private life. But that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt when somebody who looks up to that person sees this person for what they are. So it's a bit of an existential crisis because I would absolutely not be here if I didn't look up to his work, revere it in some way, and say, I want to be that guy. And I had no idea that the guy I wanted to be was a sexual assaulter of multiple people. And a colossal prick to everybody, to all of his friends, apparently. I mean, much less important, but also in that case. Had no idea. So, it makes me feel ashamed and angry that I ever felt that way, was taken in to his confidence in that way, even though I never met him. I never met him, and yet I felt like I knew him. Like, if I ever met Brandon Stroud, he and I would be really good friends. We have so much in common. We have the same outlook on a lot of things. I bet you we could sit down, have a beer, and be best buds in no time. That's how I felt about him, having never met him. Imagine how these women who were taken in by him felt when he told them his lies. Allegedly. So, because I revered him so much, I directed people to his work. I said, hey, go check out this guy. He's writing amazing stuff. He's really got it all figured out. The WWE thing. All the tropes and plot hole consistencies all the time. He's not wrong about any of those things. I mean, it may have been all bullshit, but what he was saying wasn't wrong. It was just being typed out by a complete shitbag. Allegedly. I even feel bad that I would retweet a lot of his jokes. Because I followed him, because he got rid of his fucking social media, as he wants to slink away with his tail between his legs and hope this all blows over, I guess. His employer, with spandex at UpRocks, took 11 days to come out with a 2-paragraph, we're conducting an internal investigation into an employee who has been accused of some improprieties or some shit. He's been accused of rape. And you could go ahead and name him. We all know who you're talking about. But they took down the site completely. They haven't updated it in over, like, almost 2 weeks. So they're keeping other people from making a living because if they don't write, they don't get paid. So they could, what, maybe protect this guy? I'm sorry I ever retweeted him. Sorry I ever told anybody, go read this guy's stuff. Sorry I ever aspired to be anything like him. I did not know. I feel like I could not have known. And yet I blame myself for not knowing and for being taken in by this confidence man. So I apologize to anybody. Anybody out there who may have been hurt by him, who saw me retweeting his shit and have to think to themselves to relive any part of what he put them through. I'm not going to go into any details. You can fucking just go on your Twitter and search Brandon Stroud and you'll find that shit. So I've been in a really shitty mood most of the day reading that stuff, knowing that this person, again, hero is too strong a word, but not that strong of a word. I really, really looked up to this guy. I patterned a lot of my shit off of his shtick. It wasn't a complete copycat job, but hey, let's be honest. A lot of his stuff that I also hate, I say, you know what, that's a good point. I'm going to take that, I'm going to build off of it, and create my own little thing. And I never, ever, ever would have wanted to get into wrestling criticism, if that's even an actual thing, without reading that guy's stuff and saying, I want to do that too. I want to be like him. And it really fucking sucks when you find out the person you've been looking up to this whole time is a despicable piece of garbage to the highest degree, or to the lowest degree, if you want to put it that way. And again, I apologize, and I am, my heart goes out to everybody who was affected, victimized by that guy. And I'm going to do a lot of soul searching about why I was so easily duped by him into thinking that he was a good dude. I may have a lot of trust issues from now on. But I trust all of you, and I love all of you. Stay safe. This has been Sour Graps. Thanks for listening to me have an existential crisis on the airwaves. I have been Alex Pulowski. I love you all, Fightful Faithful. But as always, everything sucks.